Okay, students, it's time to discuss bonds, boring bonds, stodgy bonds, reliable bonds. And we start with a quote from Andrew Carnegie, way before the movie Gentlemen Prefer Blondes was ever thought of and created. Gentlemen prefer bonds. Yeah, well, okay, bonds are reliable, but as we're going to see, they're not that exciting. But I guess that's okay, because in investing, boring can be good. So let's get started with slide number 2. What are bonds? Well, they're securities, which means they can be traded. They're financial investments that can be traded. Negotiable, publicly traded long-term debt securities, whereby the issuer agrees to pay a fixed amount of interest over a specified period of time and to repay a fixed amount of principal at maturity. So when you invest in stocks, you're an owner, and when you invest in bonds, you're a loaner. L-O-A-N-E-R. You're lending your money, like the bank. You're getting to play the part of the bank. We call bonds fixed income securities, or simply just fixed securities. They are debt financing, as opposed to stocks, which are equity financing. A bond is really just an IOU issued by a corporation, corporate bonds, state and local governments, municipal bonds, and of course the federal government, treasury bonds or government bonds. The bond holder loans the money to the bond issuer. So when you're an investor, you are making loans. You are lending your money. The bonds are loans. Investors who buy bonds are loaners instead of owners, stocks and equities. So, okay. Why? What's going on here? Well, when a bond issue is created, there is a trust indenture. Now, we as individual shareholders never see these, but they're basically like mortgage statements. They are contracts that set forth the terms between the issuer, the corporation, the state and local government, and the federal government, and the bondholders, the investors. They describe the bondholder's rights and the issuer's obligations and responsibilities. There is a trustee that is appointed to oversee that these obligations are carried out, and that's usually a commercial bank or a trust company. And they stipulate protective covenants. They are obligations of the bond issuer to keep doing business, keep equipment in good working order, make payments on time. For example, the bonds that Southwestern Community College issued to fix up the campus. Now, in those covenants, in that trust agreement, in that trust indenture, is verbiage that says we cannot use the money to give ourselves a pay raise. Right? We had to use that money to build out the campus, to build up the stadium and the new buildings that we've created. Make sense? Yeah, like a mortgage document. When you sign a mortgage document, you are agreeing to certain things, such as making sure you don't let the house fall into disrepair, making sure you have insurance, and that you pay the mortgage on time. Why should investors invest in bonds? Slide number 4. Well, investors, bond holders receive interest. And that's the big reason we buy bonds. Over the long sweep of time, that's what you receive from bonds. They're normally paid every 6 months. So some bonds pay quarterly, some bonds pay monthly, but in this class, we will always think of bonds as paying every 6 months. The principal is then returned when the bond is redeemed. And the maturity is usually, it says 1 to 10 years, but it's usually 1 to 30 years. It's usually 2 to 30 years or more. There is, of course, a potential for capital gain or a capital loss. What? I mean, it's a loan. How can it be worth more or worth less? Well, we're going to discuss that. If interest rates fall, there is a potential for capital gain, but there's also a potential for capital loss if interest rates rise. Oh boy, this is the trickiest part of bonds, which we'll see going forward. But if you intend to hold the bond to maturity when the bond is redeemed, when you're paid back, you don't care about capital gains or losses. They don't affect you. Some bonds offer tax advantages, as we'll see with municipal bonds, and some bonds can be converted into stocks, convertible bonds, which we'll deal with in a few weeks. Not that exciting. Okay, a couple weeks, actually. They're preferred stock, convertible preferred, convertible bonds, hybrid securities. They're not for the vast majority of us. But it sounds exciting, doesn't it? Convertible reminds you of a convertible top car with the wind blowing through your hair and until you can't get the top back up and it's raining. Anyway, slide number 5. Bondholders are first in line for repayment if there is default on the loans after taxes and payroll expenses. Who's at the back of the line? The stockholders. That's why when a company goes bankrupt, the bondholders get to pick over the carcass, and by the time they've gotten their due, there's nothing left for the stockholders. Bond prices are far less volatile than stocks, but bond prices still fluctuate. Bond prices can go down and do go down when interest rates rise. Bond prices can go up when interest rates fall. What's going on here? Relax, we'll get back to it. And the average return over decades has been 4 to 8%. Piano, you need to change that. Bonds are not paying anywhere near 4 to 8%. But your grandparents remember times when bonds were paying that? Because they were paying mortgages of 6, 7, 8%, which is kind of in line with the bonds. But what are mortgages now? 3%? And so if you get 3% from a bond, you're doing pretty good. Munis and municipal bonds and treasury bonds typically pay less than corporate bonds. Well, that makes sense because corporations can and do go bankrupt. It's very rare when a municipality goes bankrupt. It happens, but it's very rare. And the United States Treasury has never gone bankrupt. And as we say in the little note below, many bonds are paying far less than these historical returns. Some people make the point that, well, you know, Piano is really not looking at the long sweep of time, meaning 100 or 200 years when bonds typically paid 3%. Yes. You know, if you go back far enough, you'll see that bond, right now with the, it's really, really low. But still, you go back far enough, you see that bonds didn't pay a whole lot back then either. So I guess from the 1930s and 40s onward to the 1980s and 90s, that was an aberration? I don't know. I'm not that good a historian, I guess. Slide number 6. By far, the most misunderstood feature about bonds is their inverse relationship with interest rates. When interest rates fall, bond prices rise. When interest rates rise, bond prices fall. Think of the seesaw, the sube y bajo. Did I say that right? Sube y bajo. It's an inverse relationship, which is a fancy way of saying they go in opposite directions. Now, folks, I'm going to ask you this 4 or 5 or 6 times on the exams, all right? So you better get it right. It's the trickiest part of, bonds. It confuses, you know, professionals. Professionals get tripped up over this because you zig when you should have zagged or you see when you should have saw. So do remember the picture of the seesaw. Slide number 7. Let's discuss bonds versus stocks. Well, over the long term, stocks have outperformed bonds by a whole lot. So why would you want to invest in bonds? Well, stocks carry more risk. They are far more volatile. I bought it for $12, sold it for 30 cents. Bonds offer an element of stability to your portfolio. You sailor folks will know the term ballast, right? They hold your portfolio from tipping over. And for some investors, stocks are simply too darn risky. They reason, if I can obtain my long-term goals without taking on the risk of being invested in stocks, then so be it. It's called the I can sleep better at night factor. And stocks, bonds also make good intermediate term investments, where we like to think of stocks as good long-term investments. And sometimes bonds are just screaming good deals. But dear students, stocks must perform better than bonds over the long term. In the short term and even in intermediate term sometimes, and sometimes even there are 10-year periods where bonds will outperform stocks. It happens. But over the long sweep of time, why? Well, when you think about how the society and our economy and the capitalist system that we utilize is developed, is structured, who pays the bonds for corporations? Right, the companies. And if the companies are doing very, very poorly, sure, their stocks are going to do poorly. But if they don't come back, if the economy doesn't bounce back, well, then the bonds are eventually going to fail too, because the companies are not going to be able to make their interest payments. They're going to go through bankruptcy and the bondholders are going to get what's left over, which probably isn't going to be a whole lot. Plus, muni bonds, how are they paid? And treasury bonds, how are they paid? By taxes. And if the economy has fallen apart, where there's no food at the grocery store, no gas at the gas station, no clothes at the mall, the cell phones aren't working, the hospitals, the banks, the schools, the fire departments, the police departments are all shuttered, the trash isn't being picked up, the sewage is... Yeah, that's not a scenario we want to even think about. Failure is not an option. So over the long sweep of time, even though I'm not allowed to say this, by the way, stocks must outperform bonds. They have to. If they don't, well, then let's not think about that scenario, because, I've eaten some bugs, but moth soup just doesn't sound appealing. Boiling bark for dinner? No. Digging for beetle grubs? I don't think so. Slide number 8. What are the risks of bond investing? Well, there are risks involved with bond investing. There are risks involved with all investing, even short-term investments, which aren't going to lose value, but they can have their risks, as we saw way back in chapter 1. And the same thing is true with bonds. Interest rate risk. We've already made mention of this. We'll mention it many times. When rates fall, bond prices rise. When rates rise, bond prices fall. If you intend to sell the bonds in the future, a rise in interest rates can translate into capital losses. Now, if you have no plans to sell your bonds, you don't care. It's not going to hurt you. But if you're forced to sell, exactly, then you might wind up with capital losses. Purchasing power risk is the risk that your purchasing power will fall if inflation outstrips your return from your bonds. Well, this is the same risk that we have with short-term investments. Inflation doesn't stop just because you decide to stop investing. The business, the financial risk, the risk of default, the risk that the bond issuer will default on interest payments or principal payments or both. Now, this is very rare, folks. It happens. Companies go through bankruptcy. Most people pay their mortgages, pay their credit card bills, pay their car payments. And the same thing is true for companies and municipalities and the treasury. The treasury's never gone bankrupt. And when people say the treasury is going bankrupt, I say, well, I don't think so. You think the United States is going to be around in 40 years? Yeah, they say yes. I say, well, yeah. We're going to have to pay back all those bonds that we issued. And it's not going to be fun. It's going to be ugly. And I pity the poor politicians trying to say, look, your taxes are going to have to rise because we have to make these payments. But it's not likely that the United States government is going away, barring any huge disaster of any great import. As we said, some municipalities have gone through bankruptcy. It's very rare, but it happens. But companies do go through bankruptcy. Yeah, it happens. It happens. So you have to think about that when you are evaluating a bond. And we'll see in our next presentation that there are credit rating agencies that rate the bonds, rate the issuers for their credit worthiness. Slide number 9, liquidity risk. This is a risk that there may not be sufficient buyers when and if the investor wants to sell their bonds. It's less of a problem with treasuries and munis. People tend to hang on to their bonds. They tend to buy their bonds and then hold them for the long term because they want the interest payments. So it can be a problem, but if they're high quality bonds, no, somebody's going to want to buy them. Now, with thinly traded bonds of lower quality, yes, this could be a problem. And then the call risk. Call prepayment risk is probably an easier way to understand it. Yes, some bonds can be called away from you, which means they refinance the bonds. They are paying a higher interest rate, and they say, look, new interest rates, new bonds can be sold for this interest rate, much less. So why don't we refinance? Much like a home mortgage, home owner would want to refinance their mortgage. So they say, okay, I'm going to pay off my mortgage. Well, the same thing is true with bonds. I'm going to pay off the bonds. And so they're called away from you. Come here, bonds, come here. There are some bonds that are non-callable, and we'll discuss the call feature in detail later on. Now, what's the coupon rate? What a silly name. Well, it's still in the lexicon. It's still in the language, even though it's technologically an anachronism, which means it's obsolete. This is the feature of the bond that defines the amount of annual interest income. It's also called the nominal rate, which is probably a better name, the coupon yield, the nominal yield. They all mean the same thing, so you have to learn both, coupon and nominal. As we said, the interest is paid every 6 months, although some are paid every month, quarterly to once a year. And where did the term coupon rate come from? Well, it came from the fact that bonds used to have coupons attached to them. When the interest was due and an investor was required to clip the coupon, send in the coupon into the bond issuer, and the issuer would then send the bondholder the interest. To this day, earning interest from a bond is often called clipping the coupon, even though now virtually all transactions are done electronically. So think about the technology of the day. You had a bond with all these coupons on it, and so it made it very easy for you to sell that bond. All you did was give it to somebody else. They gave you the money for the bond, and now they clipped the coupon and told the company or municipality or whatever to send them the cash, the payment, as opposed to sending it to you. You just sold the bond. See that? But they're called bearer bonds, and they're all gone. But on the Infernal Net, you can see pictures of these, and we have a link to a Google image search that shows you examples of these. And now they've become collectibles. They've actually, like the stock certificates, these bearer bonds you can buy and sell. They're not worth anything. They're just there for collectors. They're cool. Slide number 11, the principal. The amount of capital that must be paid at maturity. In other words, how much is the loan? It's also called the par value, the face value. So you have to learn all three: principal, par value, face value. And the principal, the par value, the face value of most all bonds is 1,000. So bonds are denominated in $1,000 increments. Putting the coupon rate and the principal together tells you how much interest you will receive each year. For example, a coupon rate of 7% and a principal of $1,000 gives you $70 of interest each year. Now remember, they're going to pay you twice a year, so that's $35. They don't pay you the whole $70 twice a year. They pay you $35 first 6 months and then $35 the second 6 months. And since almost all bonds are denominated in $1,000 increments, knowing the coupon rate gives you the amount of interest. So if it's a 7% bond, $70. A 5% bond, $50. A 2% bond, $20. You see, in this class, all bonds will have $1,000 denominations, increments. Okay? So even though we know some bonds are out there 5 and 10,000, forget about them. Always, always be 1,000. So that tells us if it's a 9% bond, $90, piece of cake. Normally, bond investors simply refer to their bonds by the coupon rate of the maturity. So I bought a 7% 30-year bond. You don't have to say it's $1,000. It's just understood. Maturity date. The date on which the bond matures and the principal must be repaid. Now, most bonds are term bonds. What does that mean? They mature all at once. So for example, a company will issue 20-year bonds for all that all mature in 20 years on the same date. There are serial bonds that have maturity dates. And for example, a company may issue series of 20-year bonds with 20 maturity dates, each series maturing each year for 20 years or maybe every 5 years. So each year, a certain portion of the issue would come due and be paid off. That series matures. Now, you're used to paying principal and interest when you pay your mortgage. Well, that term bonds don't work that way. We pay the interest, or the bond issuers pay the interest, and then boom, at the end, they pay off the entire bond. Whereas the serial bonds are more along the line of what we think about when we think of a loan. They're paying interest along the way, and they're paying some of the principal as they go. But they are the exception, not the norm. Now, slide number 13. Bonds versus newts. This is something that drives me personally crazy, but it's part of the industry. Technically, there is a difference between a bond and a note. Notes mature in 2 to 10 years, whereas a bond matures more than 10 years, 10 years or more, 20 to 30 years. Some bonds mature in 50 or 100 years. And there are some bonds that never mature. They're called perpetuities, meaning they just keep paying it until, I guess, they decide to pay it off, right? They keep paying the interest and say, okay, we'll pay the bond off. In practice, most investors, including myself, use the term bond to refer to both bond and newts. So if you're a real stickler for detail and someone says, oh, I bought a 5-year U.S. Treasury bond, you will say to them, oh, no, 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 no. That's a 5-year Treasury note. As far as I'm concerned. Slide number 14. Now, let's take some attention onto the call provision of bonds. It's something that we need to understand, because if we're going to make a loan, if we're going to invest in loans, we have to realize that they might get called away from us. They might get refinanced. The call provision is a provision that specifies whether and under what conditions, what circumstances, the issuer can retire, prepay the bond prior to the maturity date. If interest rates drop, just as a homeowner would want to refinance their mortgage, a bond issuer would want to refinance their bond loans. The issuer calls in the bonds. Here, bonds, come here, bonds, I want to pay you off. So this is the prepayment of principal. They're not waiting until the maturity date. They're saying, hop, paying it off right now. All factors being equal, all their factors being equal, and of course they never are, investors would prefer non-callable bonds to callable bonds. Right. We would not want the bond issuer to call our bonds back, because now that means we've got to go out and find new bonds, and new bonds are paying less than the interest rate that we were getting. Why else would they refinance? You wouldn't refinance a loan unless the interest rate was less. So there are three types of bonds with regard to their call provisions. Some are freely callable, which can be called at any time, which is unusual. Usually, there's some kind of deferred call protection period. Some bonds are non-callable, which means they are prohibited from ever being called. But typically what the issuer do is they'll say, look, we'll wait 5 or 10 years before we call them back. Is that cool? You happy with that? That's called the call protection period, the call deferment period. Most corporate or municipal bonds are freely callable or have a deferred call. Treasuries, so far, have never issued anything other than non-callable bonds. Treasuries are non-callable. Which of the above provisions is the least desirable? From the viewpoint of the investor, freely callable is the least desirable. The most desirable is non-callable. And of course, deferred call is somewhere in between. Slide number 16, the call premium. And this is going to make more sense when we take a look at some examples, which there are presentations that show you some examples of bond issues and advertisements. The call premium is an amount that is added to a bond's par value and paid to investors when a bond is retired prematurely. For example, there might be an $85 or $30 or $50 premium. You can think of it as a prepayment penalty on your home mortgage. Most mortgages do not come with a prepayment penalty, but some do. Maybe for 3 years or maybe for five or maybe forever, because they don't want you to pay off the mortgage. So, okay, you pay it off, you're going to have to pay us more. So this is what happens in this case. If there's a call premium of $85, the issuer must pay to retire the bond prematurely. So that's equal to the par value plus whatever premium is tacked on. And in this case, if there's an $85 premium, the call price would be $1,085. So they made the loan at $1,000, but to retire the loan before the maturity date, they have to pay that prepayment penalty. If there is no call premium, the bond is said to be callable at par. Callable at par, meaning they call it at $1,000. Again, there are some bonds that are not $1,000, but for this class, all bonds are $1,000 increments. A premium versus a discount bond. Okay. Because now we're going to turn our attention once again to the principles of bond price behavior. We've already made mention of this, and I know it's a little tricky. It's the trickiest part of bonds, but it's not that difficult once you've done it a few times, figured it out. A premium bond is a bond which they market value greater than the par value. This occurs when prevailing interest rates drop below the coupon rate. Interest rates fall, bond prices rise. A discount bond, on the other hand, is a bond with a market value lower than the par value. It occurs when prevailing interest rates are greater than the coupon rate. Interest rates rise, bond prices fall. It's kind of tricky. Don't worry, it tricks everybody. Interest rates rise, bond prices fall, and you get a discount bond. But this also occurs when and if the investment community believes that the bond issuer is in danger of defaulting on the interest payments or the principal payments. In other words, they will sell the bond for whatever price. Get rid of the bond like the hot potato. I don't want it. Because they think that this entity is going to go under. And that is something to think about, folks. And we're going to see some grand examples with Ford and the school district of Poway. Now, wait a minute. I don't understand. Why would a bond sell at a premium or a discount to its par value, right? If the loan is for $1,000, wouldn't the bond always sell for $1,000? No. No. The interest rate on your bond doesn't change. It is fixed. Remember, that's what we call bonds, fixed investments. Since the interest rate on your bond doesn't change, the price of your bond changes to reflect the change in the prevailing interest rates within the financial industry. Remember the image of the seesaw? Interest rates go down, bond prices go up. But interest rates go up, bond prices go down. That's how it works. So let's take a look at an example on slide 19. We had a bond paying 10%. Woo, woo, woo. That's 1980s. Not anymore here. The bond's face value is $1,000. You are getting $100 of interest. That's 10% of $1,000. That's $100. Actually, you're getting $50 twice a year. Now interest rates fall to 8%. Investors have to pay more to get the same amount of interest, right? If they could find a bond for $1,250, which they want, but they would have to pay $1,250 for a new bond to get $100. They're only going to get $80 from new bonds because they're only paying 8%. So would you sell your bond that's giving people $100 when new bonds at $1,000 are only giving $80? No, you're going to ask for a premium. Your bond is now worth more than it was. And if you sold it, you would get a capital gain, which you're, remember, it's a security. You can trade it. The bond could now be sold at a high premium. You don't have to sell it. No one's forcing you to sell it. You can continue to receive your $50 twice a year, $100 once a year, per year. And the same thing happens on the other side of the transaction. If we have a bond that's paying 10%, we're getting $100 every year, $50 twice a year. But now interest rates rise. Now, to get $100 of interest, they only need to pay $833, but there's no bonds that are selling for that. But new bonds are giving them $120 because they pay $1,000 for a bond paying 12%. So they're going to get $60 twice a year. The result is your bond is now worth less than it was worth in the past. If you tried to sell it now, nobody's going to pay you $1,000 if they're only going to get $100. When if they bought a new bond for $1,000, they're going to get $120. They would demand that you sell the bond at a discount, and you would have a capital loss. Of course, again, you're under no obligation to sell the bond. You don't have to sell it. You can continue to receive your $50 twice a year, $100 every year, and be happy with that until the bond matures. The slide 21, the amount of the premium or discount is not only related to the amount of the fall or rise of interest rates. In general, the greater the fall or rise in interest rates, the greater the premium or discount. Well, that makes sense. But also the maturity date is very important. In general, the longer the maturity, the greater the premium or discount. So, just like the seesaw, think of the seesaw. The farther out you are, the greater the price, the greater the rise or fall of the price. And the closer you are to maturity, the less of a rise or fall when interest rates change. If you remember the seesaw when you were a child, or maybe not, maybe now, if you're on either side of the seesaw and somebody else jumps off, what do? Whew, boom, you fall right to the bottom. But if you're in the middle and are, you know, going back and forth with the two kids on either side, you're just going moving a little bit at a time. Make sense? That is why back in chapter 4, when we were discussing mutual funds, long-term bond mutual funds have greater volatility, are more risky than short-term bond mutual funds, because the long-term bonds can be affected greater by rises and falls in the interest rates. Make sense? I hope so. The seesaw is a perfect analogy to remember. Slide 22. Now, this is a graph that's from your book, and I don't really like it. I would have put the time, I would put zero over here, but they put zero on the right side. Okay, whatever. But they're showing you that if the interest rate stays the same, the bond is going to be 1,000. They use percentage of par, which you just move the decimal one to the right. But if you're way out here at 30 years until your bond matures and interest rates fall, the premium is going to go way up. Whereas if you're going to mature in a year or so, the premium is going to go up a little bit, but not much. And the same thing is true if interest rates rise. If your bond isn't going to mature for 30 years and interest rates rise, well, then the discount is going to plummet like a stone. And then if you're closer to the maturity date, the drop in the price will be much smaller. I hope that makes sense. If not, then just think of this seesaw. In general, long-term bonds exhibit greater price volatility and a greater opportunity for capital gain or loss. Intermediate-term bonds, short-term bonds exhibit lesser price volatility and, of course, a lesser opportunity for capital gain or loss. Bonds very close to maturity act very similar to short-term investments such as money markets. In fact, the money market mutual funds that were tax exempt were municipal. They bought municipal bonds that were about ready to mature in 30 days or 60 days or whatever. Yeah. So as you get closer and closer to the maturity, they start to look like the short-term instruments that we worked on in Chapter 1. However, again, I'm going to make sure you understand this. If you intend to keep the bonds until they mature, then you are not concerned about the price volatility. You will always receive the par value of the bond, up except in the rare case of a bond default. Okay. Slide 24. Here is the graph that we looked at way back in Chapter 5 when we discussed the yield on stocks versus the yield on bonds. And we saw that from the late 1970s, early 1980s, when the Federal Reserve Bank broke the back of inflation, that bond yields have been falling and falling and falling and falling and falling. Every once in a while, they pop back up again. So what has happened to bond prices? They've been rising and rising and rising. So anybody who's owned bonds over the last 30 years has been pretty darn happy. Almost 40 years now, has been pretty darn happy. But now, what can we say about interest rates? They're about as low as they can. Well, they touched, the 10-year bond touched, almost 0.5%, and now it's back up to 1.6 or 7%. Yeah, so who knows? We'll see what happens in the future. Remembering that rising interest rates are, in the short term, are kind of scary for bondholders, yes, but in the long term, that means the economy is doing better. And if it indeed means the economy is doing better, we'll know in a year or two. We'll see. Investors believe the economy is doing better, which means they believe that that there's going to be more inflation and more demand for bonds, so demand for money, so the interest rates will rise. So we'll see. We'll find out. That's a good sign. So don't worry if your bond in the short term loses money. Extend your time horizon and realize that new bonds are going to be paying higher interest rates, and yippee, we like that. So to ask the questions, when would you be buying bonds? Well, yippee, hindsight is 2020. You'd be buying them in the 1980s. When would you be selling them? I'd be selling them right now if I were a big bond holder, which I'm not, by the way. I'm not a big fan of bonds. I hope you probably figured that one out or not. Okay. Thank you for your excellent effort and attention. Go back over, make sure you understand the terms and the concepts that we went over in these 24 slides, because now we're going to go through the universe of bonds, from the least riskiest, treasuries through munis, to corporate bonds, and realize that, yeah, bonds are pretty boring. Oh, well. See you in our next presentation, dear students. As always, thank you so much for being in our class, and we are so proud of you for sticking it out this far. Oh my goodness, don't give up now.